percent?
Yeah, I think we'll correct, we'll correct most of them anyway, except for the translations. Let's see. Well, maybe we'll wait a minute. Till we're ready to see. Why don't you hang on to them and spread them out since everybody's here?
Well, you don't want to hand them back to the people?
No, not. No, we'll hand them back at random and correct them.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. You haven't taken it yet, have you? Okay. Yeah, we'll. Let's see. You can just check in the library and then peek back, and we'll probably only take about 15 minutes or so on this.
Okay, I'll check back in 25.
Okay, sure. Oh, yeah? Oh, see how they get their own test at random? Shake your confidence in the second law of thermodynamics. Yeah, right.
Not at all, actually. If it did it the second time.
Well, yeah. Well, it's possible that if everybody sat in the same place as they sat yesterday. And if, well, of course, people handed them in order, they got done, so. Didn't work. Okay, we'll just have them pass out the papers here. Just get a paper and we'll correct it. We'll correct what we can. There's the translation portions I'm going to correct myself so I can evaluate it, but I'll go through it. Oh yes. Well, I had to get Ionios in there, you know.
Well, that was some other time too, isn't it?
Uh huh.
You got us two for one.
Yeah. Yeah, we can. If some of you can take two, that'll be fine. Till if somebody else shows up, we can. Okay, 150 points possible. Subtract the number. Put the number wrong in the margin outside. And question one: score yourself from 0 to 10 points for reading. So if they've got 10, is you know, there's nothing wrong. If they put down 9 points, put -1 in the margin. If they put down 5 points, put -5, etc. In other words, down the number wrong that there would be there. Okay, we've got a couple of you got extra papers. We've got two more. Okay, so just put down minus the number, whatever number they've got less than 10 there. Number two, these are worth 4 points, total 2 points each. What is the grammatical term for a verb that has both active and passive forms? Should be transitive. And a verb that has no passive forms cannot take an object is called intransitive. Intransitive, in that order. Okay, number three. Okay. Oh, okay. You mean the second one, for the second choice? It has no passive forms, cannot take an object. That's true. An equative verb is a class of intransitive verb. Anybody else do that? Anybody else put equative for that second one? That's true. The trouble is that equative verbs are even a special class of that. I'll probably give partial credit. Leave a question mark on there. I'll probably give partial credit for it. But whoever's got Tony's paper, whoever did that, leave a question mark on that. If anybody else did that, leave a question mark on that. Okay, number three, 4 points. A verb that can, because here's the point that I'm working. A verb that can join two nominative nouns in a Greek sentence is called equative. Equative.
What about state of being?
No, not really, because there's state of being verbs that are not equative. That doesn't work. There's a whole class of verbs called stative verbs that are not necessarily not equative. Yes?
That transitive slash equative here.
Oh, boy. Leave a question mark. I'll have to do some judgment on that.
How are we scoring this 3 points and 4 points?
Okay, 2 points for the first blank and 1 point each for the next two. Okay. What are the two most important English verbs in the above category? To be and to become. to be and to become. Those are the two verbs. And in Greek, it's eimi and ginomai. So, yes?
What has to be and become on one line is our was were on the second
line. Okay.
There.
Yeah, they're both there. Leave a question mark there. I may have to take one half point off or something like that. Okay. Yeah, if there's something strange that you're not sure how to score, I'll just have to make a judgment on it. Okay. So to be and to become, or eimi and ginomai, or something along those lines. Okay, so to be, to become. If they had some form of the verb to be, like is or something like that, and then had, you know, become. In other words, they don't have to have the infinitive forms necessarily. As long as they're identifying the verb, that's all right. Number four. We're 2 points. Second noun that is grammatically joined to the subject above sentence structure is called a predicate nominative. Predicate nominative. It's the only thing that works there.
What's the difference between that and a positive?
And a positive will not have a verb form. There will be no form of the verb to be, and there won't be this particular structure either. You don't need the verb to be, of course, to get a predicate nominative construction. However, for an appositive, you're going to see a situation in which the two are standing side by side and functioning together as one unit in the whole sentence structure. So there's no stated equation between the two, as it were. There's no structure that's indicating the equation. The appositives are things that function together as a unit. Okay?
Predicate noun.
Predicate noun. Well, that's awful close. Just take off a half point on that.
Just predicate,
1 point off. 2 points possible, 1 point off. Need that predicate nominative, because in Greek structure, you see, it's a predicate nominative. Okay, number five, we're 10 points. In Greek, since both nouns in the above structure are nominative, list the five ways in which we might decide which one is the subject. Okay, this doesn't have to be in any particular order, so you may have to look at look through here. 2 points each. They've got them, and if there's any question mark, any questions on these applicability and so forth, I guess I'll have to look at those. It's not as easy to correct as I thought here. But number one, proper name. If one of them's a proper name, so that's one of the points. It doesn't have to be in that order. If one has the article, that's another example. Number two, if one has the article, the one with the narrower reference, the one with the narrower reference, something that, the one that's referred to in the previous context. The one that's referred to in the previous context, and if one of them's a pronoun. If one of them's a pronoun. Those are the five things. Proper name, have one having the article, the other not. One having the one that has a narrower reference, they both are the same as far as definiteness. The one that's referred to in the previous context, or a pronoun. Yes?
Proper noun.
Proper noun, proper name. Yeah, that's good enough. Proper name, proper noun, same thing. Okay. Anyone else with a question on those? Okay. And if you're not certain how to score, just go ahead and leave a question mark there. Number six. For what three things are Greek adjectives inflected? Doesn't have to be in this order, but it's case, number, and gender. Case, number, and gender. Yes. No, not person. That would apply to a verb, but not to an. The term person, see, the term person in grammar denotes first, second, third person as opposed to the action. But gender's denoting male, masculine, feminine, neuter. So they're just confusing with verb. Okay, so those are worth 2 points each. 2 points each. Okay, number seven, worth 8 points, 2 points each, all or nothing. In other words, each part of this is all or nothing. If one thing's out of order, it's 2 points off on each line. So you're to diagram the four positions of adjectives with the article using these symbols. First attributive should be T-ADJ-N. In other words, article, adjective, noun. If anything's out of order there, it's 2 points off. Second attributive should be article, noun, article, adjective. Article, noun, article, adjective. So it'd be T-N-T-ADJ. Okay? The next one should be, first predicate position should be adjective, article, noun. So ADJ-T-N. And the second predicate, article, noun, adjective. T-N-ADJ, yes.
What if they transpose the first and second predicate
but they're correct form. In other words, he's got the second for the first and the first.
Oh, second. Okay. Well, I'll just have to take off four. Because it's really important to know what these positions are. To be consistent with everything, it'll just be. First predicate should be adjective, article, noun. A-D-J-T-N. In that order. Have to be dogmatic on these, because these positions, if you start getting them mixed up, you can get in real trouble later on. Okay, number eight, worth 4 points. 2 points per blank. In how many of the four above positions can the articular genitive phrase appear with an articular noun in Greek? And it should be four, all four of them. And in how many of the positions in which it can appear is the meaning of the structure the same as the meaning of a predicate position for an adjective with an articular noun? That's zero. It doesn't have that predicate meaning. So four and zero in that order. 2 points per blank there. Okay, question 9, 10, and 11, I'm going to correct myself. Because there's a lot of complications there. I could go ahead and read the answers for you if you're interested, just for your own curiosity. Okay. Huh? No, don't mark them at all. I just prefer, because that way I can just do it all. Yes.
The problem that would help me is if you read them off after we got our own papers back.
Okay, why don't I do that? That I think that'd probably be better. Then you could see how you did and get an idea. That's a good suggestion. Okay, let's skip through 9, 10, and 11 for now, and we'll come back to them, and I'll read them over when you get your own paper back. Okay, good. Number 12. Three points, 1 point per blank. What are the names of the last three syllables in the Greek word? We're liable to get some interesting spellings here, but the third to the last syllable should be the antepenult. A-N-T-E-P-E-N-U-L-T. Be a little tolerant on the spelling, but if it's so bad as to be unrecognizable, then you'll have to count it off. Okay, but I would like you to learn the spelling of these terms. Second to last, penult, P-E-N-U-L-T, and the last, ultima. U-L-T-I-M-A. Okay, 1 point per blank. Now, number 13, 8 points, one half point each. So these are each worth a half point for a total of eight. There's 16 blanks, each worth a half point. Place the appropriate number by the following vowels and diphthongs to indicate whether they are long or short. So number one means always long, number two means always short, number three sometimes long, sometimes short, number four short, one final, otherwise long. Okay, I'm going to read across here, just as you normally would read. So the epsilon should be 2, the omega should be 1, the alpha should be 3, epsilon iota should be 1, eta with iota subscript should be 1, omicron should be 2, next line, eta should be 1, alpha with iota subscript should be 1, omicron iota should be 4, iota should be 3, omicron upsilon should be 1, alpha upsilon should be 1, and the last line, upsilon should be 3, alpha iota is 4, epsilon upsilon is 1, and upsilon iota is 1. Yes, Jim?
For the two diphthongs that go short at the end.
Yes.
You put 3 and 4.
Oh, 3 and 4. Well, oh, I see. Yeah, it is true. Well, I guess I'm not going to worry about that. He's got the right idea. Anybody else do that? Okay. All right. Now, it is true, sometimes long, sometimes short, and then you have to decide on the basis of, okay, that's all right. I'm not going to worry about that. Number 14. 16 points. These are worth 2 points each. And what you're asked to do is tell what's wrong with the accent in each case. And if there's nothing wrong with it, say that too. So part A, do loose. The problem there is we've got a long ultima. The penult can only have the acute. So you may not have worded it in all that fancy fashion. But the point is that with the ultima long, with the last syllable long, that circumflex can't stand in the penult. Mm-hmm.
Does the reason have to be stated or just
stated? Oh, okay. What was stated there? Let me get an idea.
That it should have the acute and penult.
Oh, okay. That's fine. If it should have the acute instead of the... if they say they should have the acute on the penult instead of the circumflex, they're doing that on the basis of the fact that it's long at the end. Okay? These I may have to take a look, too, see if it's... all right. So if you're in doubt, you might leave a question. B, huios theou. The problem there is that the acute change should be a grave when followed by an accented word. So if they just said the acute on Hilyos should be a grave, that'd be fine. The problem is that the word following is accented. When the word following is accented, an acute on the last syllable changed to a grave. Okay, grafe, there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay, just the way it is. Now, if you had, this is presuming it's in a context with another word following and so forth. If it were in a context with another word following, in other words, it would change to a grave. But since you don't have another word following it, you don't have to do that. Okay. Dulu, problem there is that the accent is not to be on the is supposed to be on the second letter of the diphthong, not the first one. Yes.
Where was that given in the book? I looked and I couldn't find it.
Oh, that wasn't in the appendix, but that was in the earlier the beginning chapter, I think. Yeah, it's near the beginning where it's talking about these breathing marks and this type of thing. See if I can find the page for you. The breathings, let's see, smooth breathing, rough breathing, where's it? Accents, okay. In that paragraph on page 11, section 11, and there should be a statement in there someplace. Maybe there isn't. Mm-hmm. I hope he says something about it.
Someone says it with the accents and it's weird.
Yeah, maybe he didn't say that. I think I said it in class, and I put it on the board. So your notes should have it, whether he actually states it here or not. I'm surprised.
I should remember, maybe you mentioned it way up with the breathing marks.
Yeah. Well, I know when we first discussed breathing marks and accents and so forth that I know I pointed it out on the board. I don't know where he makes a statement. Let's see. Maybe it's under the diphthongs.
Are you on page 11 there?
Yeah, that's why I'm looking at page 11. I couldn't find a statement in this paragraph, though.
It does imply that diphthongs are one vowel throughout
right.
The whole thing.
Right.
I think that's the idea.
Yeah.
I remember when we went over the breathing marks and the accents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah, we made that as part of our exercises and so forth at the beginning. So there's probably a statement in his book someplace on that. I'd be surprised if it's not. If he didn't make the statement, it's just an oversight.
It's like a
what? Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. Okay, what's the question?
Yeah, if they incorrect, but they have been incorrect for the wrong reason.
Well, why don't you put a question mark on that? It'll probably be wrong, but I'll make a judgment.
This one's kind of peculiar. Yes, the correct reason and another reason it's not correct.
Oh, okay. I guess we'll have to leave a question mark on a good number of these, because it's there's too many variations. Yeah.
You want us to put the question at the top up here?
Yeah. Well, you don't have to write the question out. Just make an indication at the top. Put a question mark at the top, and then I'll go through and examine everything on the paper. Okay, number four, pneumatos. Problem there is the circumflex can only stand on the last two syllables. So just saying that this should be an acute, not a circumflex, that'd be fine too. But the problem is that the circumflex just can't be placed that far forward. Okay, then number F, zelos. We've got a short ultima, so the P and alt F long must have the circumflex. So there should be a circumflex there if that syllable is going to be accented. Because with a short ultima, the accent on the penult, if it's accented, will be long if the syllable, will be a circumflex if it's long and acute if it's short. Okay, anthropone, the problem there is that we have a long ultima, so the antipenult cannot be accented. So I just said, if you just say something to the effect that you can't have an accent on that syllable, that's fine. Or if they said that the accent should shift, anthropone, that'd be fine too. Okay, then nomos, that even sounds wrong. The circumflex can't stand on a short syllable. So that should be an acute if it fell on that syllable. You can't have a circumflex on a short syllable. Yes. Oh, F, okay. Zelos, the problem there is that It should be a circumflex if you're going to have an accent in that syllable. And the reason is that you have a short ultima, so the penult, if long, must have the circumflex. When the ultima is short, then the penult, if it's going to have the accent, will have a circumflex if it's long, if it itself is long, and an acute if it itself is short. Okay, go ahead and pass the papers back to the owner. Don't even need to subtract the points at the top, because I'll be more than likely adding points to that. I'll correct the next section. And if there's any question marks on the paper somewhere, put one at the top there or something. Well, I'm sure I'm going to go through all of these anyway, so it probably won't matter. So you can all take a look at your paper, and we'll go through that other one real quick. Okay, does everybody have your own paper?
Robert, keep talking about that.
Thanks.
Here, I'll have behind.
Yes.
Second, a true man physician.
T noun, T adjective.
Yeah, that's what I put.
Oh. Well, okay, maybe I read it wrong. Could I have read it wrong? Yeah. So, it's okay. Make that correction. Okay. Maybe, did I read that wrong? Okay. Okay. Well, maybe somebody just transposed it in their mind when they were correcting or something. Okay, number 9, this is going to be worth 40 points, so don't have to score it here, but I'll just tell you what it is so you can get an idea how you did. Go ahead, you can hang on to yours long enough to look at it. Get an idea. Anybody else? Doesn't have their paper? Yeah, all right. Okay. Did I pass that roll book? No, I didn't. It's hiding right here. Thank you.
Gotta watch me all the time.
Okay. The number 9, the eternal glory, what you need to do is write that phrase in the nominative singular and the genitive singular. Now, of course, the genitive singular would probably translate more of the eternal glory, but this is a customary way to put things in paradigms anyway. So, nominative singular should be He Ionios Doxa. He Ionios Doxa. And the genitive singular, Tais Ioniou Doxes. Tais Ioniou Doxes. That's the genitive singular. The number 2 will be, the new temple will be To Kaino Hiero for the dative singular. That's To with the Yoda subscript, Kaino with the Yoda subscript, and Hiero with the Yoda subscript. And the accusative would be To Kainon Hieron. Omicron news on the end of both of those. The beloved disciples would be Hoi Agape Toi Mathetai. Hoi Agape Toi Mathetai. And the genitive plural, that's easy. It doesn't matter what declensions or anything else. Just omega news. Ton, agape ton, mathe ton.
I was going through that. I'm scratching my head over the first few, and I got you down.
Ah, yeah. Right. Too bad I didn't give them all genitive plurals, huh? Okay. The holy widows, dative plural. Tais, hagiais, cherais. Tais hagiais cherais. Don't worry about the accents on this course. And the accusative plural, tas hagias, cheras. So alpha sigmas all across the board there. Okay, then the translation into Greek. We're 10 points. The righteous law is eternal. There's a number of ways this can be done as far as positions. You know, what you need is a predicate position and an attributive position. The basic issue is having the word righteous in an attributive position to the word law and having the word eternal in a predicate position. So you could have had ho dikaios nomos ionios using a attributive position and your second predicate position, or you could have had Ionios ho dikaios nomos, or Ionios ho nomos ho dikaios. Another number of possibilities, but yes.
I'm first learner partner.
Yes.
You could have been second attributive form, like Ionios, which is
Oh, if they wrote that in a predicate form, you mean? No, I second attribute would be fine. Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, you could have said, hey Ionio, hey Doxa, hey Ionio. So that would be fine. Yeah, no problem there. Just don't put it in predicate position, because then it won't be translating the phrase properly. Okay, any other questions on number 10 there? That'll be worth 10 points. But the main thing I'll be watching for is if it's grammatically saying what is intended to be saying. Number 25. See, that's part of the reason why I need to correct these translations myself, because there's so many possibilities as far as, you know, if we took the time to say all the possible word order variations, especially in like sentence 11 here, we'd be here all day. Okay? So you have to just pick out the cases and so forth and line it up that way. So this is worth 25 points. Translated into Greek, the beloved brother gave the eternal word of God to the holy churches. Okay, now there's going to be lots of variations of word order that are possible. So I'm just going to read it kind of in the word order the English gave here. And I've given you the verb form, edoken, so nobody should get that one wrong. So it should be ho agape tos adelphos edoken ton ionion logon tu theou tais hagiais ekklesiais. Now there's various word orders possible, of course, but we want the subject in the nominative case ho agape tos adelphos, and you want agape tos in an attributive position, then your verb edoken, and then the direct object is the eternal word of God, so you're going to have ton ionion logon tu theou, genitive phrase modifying that, and then to the holy churches is your indirect object, so you want that in the dative case, tais, and it's dative plural, first declension, feminine noun. So it's tais, hagiais, ecclesiais. Okay? Well, that'll give you an idea of what you're looking at anyway. But don't worry about word order on this, except of course for these attributive adjectives and that type of thing. All right? You can go ahead and pass them to the front then, and we'll print the rest of it. Get it back to you as soon as I can. Grammar tests like this, it's always hard to know just what to emphasize in your study pattern. But after you've taken a few of them, and after you've been shell-shocked a few times, you'll begin to sense what's important, what isn't. So it turns out, I think just about everything's important. These are pretty exhaustive. And you'll notice, too, that there isn't any need for me to give a cumulative test in this class, because every test is cumulative. In other words, you can't do very well on any test without having kept in mind all the things you had before as well as the things you got this last section. Okay. Same thing for Hebrew, yeah. Okay, let's take a look at these accent rules again. We left off in the middle of this last time. I want to just polish up a few of the details on this, and then we'll go back into our verb forms. Page 321 in the textbook, the last in that appendix, we were looking at some of the special rules for nouns, and of the first and second declension at least. And we saw that in section 393, our main problem was that when you vary the suffixes on a noun in the declension patterns, you find that the suffixes in your nominative and accusative are generally short, and the suffixes in the dative and the genitive are generally long. And that means that a word that was accented on the antepenult, for example, is going to have to shift its accent for the dative and the genitive, because now you get a long suffix. And so we've seen some accent changes required because of that. Then some more detailed rules were given. And in first and second declensions, the acute on the ultima and the nominative singular changed to a circumflex in the genitive and dative. And so that was observed here at the top of page 321. And then in the first declension, we find some interesting features concerning the alpha being short in the ending of the nominative singular. It is also short in the accusative, or if it's short in the nominative singular, it's short in the accusative singular. And how to determine whether an alpha is short or not is really determined by the accent. So you have kind of a problem. You know that alpha can either be long or short, and the position of the accent is going to determine that for you. So it's almost a circular reasoning type of thing, except that the point is that the people say the word a certain way. And because they say the word a certain way, it's not a matter of circular reasoning. It's just a matter of that's the way they say it. So the way they say it, that's where the accent goes, and that must be the way we're treating the alpha. Okay. Then, part B, regardless of the position of the accent in the nominative singular, nouns of the first declension have a circumflex on the ultimate and the genitive plural. This constitutes an important exception to the basic rule for noun accent given the beginning of section 393. So the point here is that the first declension, genitive plural, omega nu, will get an accent, a circumflex on that omega nu, regardless of where the accent occurred in the original form, in the dictionary form. No, it's not true for second declension, only for first declension. So let's see. Find an example in second declension. Most of the time in the second declension, they end up there anyway. But
so if the second declension started out with an accent, and ultimately would stay there.
Right, right. And for example, anthropon, genitive plural, you see, is got an acute on the penult, not a circumflex on the ultima. But if that word were a first declension, it would have a circumflex on the ultima, regardless of where the accent was in the first place. So here he's giving you some examples. We've got timei. Well, the accent was on the last syllable there, so that's predictable. But thalassa, the last example there, we have it on the antepenult. But in the genitive plural, shifts all the way down to the ultima and puts a circumflex on it. So for all first declension nouns, that's what happens. And then C, the alpha and the ending alpha sigma, however analyzed, that is, whether it's accusative plural genitive singular, is always long. So in an alpha sigma suffix, the alpha is always considered long, regardless of where it is. Anytime you see alpha sigma, the alpha is considered long. And then third point here, in the second declension, the vowel alpha is short in the suffix of the nominative and accusative plural neuter. So remember, the nominative accusative plural neuters always had alpha ending. That's considered short. Okay, and you accent accordingly. And so doron has a plural dora with the circumflex on the omega there, because remember the rule says that if the ultima is short, then the accent on the penult will be a circumflex if it's long and an acute if it's short. If the ultima were long, of course you couldn't have a circumflex on that antepenult. So, I mean, excuse me, on the penult. Then rule four, part A, all the rules of accent given for nouns of the first and second declensions apply to adjectives of the first and second declensions, except for 2B above. That one about the feminine, the first declension getting the stress, excuse me, the stress on the ultima for the genitive plural does not apply to adjectives. So now you can see a little bit perhaps why we're not laying stress on all these accent rules, but to try to remember all of these things and then keep that together with all the rest of it, it's probably not worth the effort, just because it doesn't make that much difference meaning-wise. And so we'll take note of things when they do mean. But if you like this kind of thing, and if you like the challenge of it, so far you got extra time, whatever, that's fine if you want to learn. But the main reason going through this is just to tell you what happens, so that when you see something unusual, you'll know where to refer to it. And if you're trying to figure out where does this come and why. Yes, Glenn?
So, in other words, I'll just take an example. Say if you have tone, dikaion, timon, timon, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Dikaion.
It depends on whether your own is omega nu or omicron nu.
I'm talking about
omicron nu? Oh, genitive plural, okay. Yeah, if it's genitive plural, and if it's a feminine noun, which is usually associated with first declension type endings, it could be it has to be dikaion.
Yeah.
It would have to shift there, but it wouldn't be dikaion, right? Right. Whereas a noun that was in that category would shift all the way to the end. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's because the adjective could take any one of the three cases, and so it doesn't.
Well, that's perhaps part of it. The adjective is more flexible, and it's not so locked in, you know, to a particular situation. But really, it's got first declension type endings, and this rule applies to first declension, whether it's masculine or feminine.
So, violating
concord? Oh, no. This accent rule doesn't really violate any concord. It's just dealing with where the stress goes. Your declension endings and all that are the same, but it just doesn't follow the same thing that happens with the. with the noun. So you might say this, not so much a violation of Concord, because there's nothing in the Concord rules that demand an accent on the same syllable in one word as in another. But what happens, though, is that the stress may be different. The rule for the stress may be different for the adjective and for the noun in this particular case. Okay?
That doesn't have anything to do with this, what they call the adjectival use of the noun.
Well, an adjectival use of the noun, no.
Noun form.
Yeah, if it's really an adjective and it's taking a noun, functioning like a noun, it'll still follow the adjective accent rules.
It's the reverse, it'll still follow the noun.
Probably, yeah. That might be a way to test in a particular case whether you've got. Of course, you're still dependent upon how the translator and so forth interpreted that, and the text writers and so forth, where they put the stress. So, it's still not going to be really critical. But okay, and that's not likely to come up very often because you're dealing only with genitive plurals. The only place where you see any difference. Okay, then contracted adjectives. Well, he makes mention of the accentuation of participles, and we'll deal with that later on. So another class of things. We haven't got to participles yet, so we'll get to them in due time. And contracted adjectives have circumflex accent and the ultimate in all case forms. You don't know what contracted adjectives are yet. That'll be coming later on, too, so don't worry about those for now. And we won't worry about third declension yet on the next page, so we'll come back to that after we've had third declension. Let's go take a look then at section 395, rules of accent for verbs. I only want to look at this first page on this because there's a lot more in the ensuing sections, but they're dealing with infinitives and things like that we haven't dealt with yet. So we'll just deal with what we have looked at. And the rule for accent of verbs is pretty straightforward and fairly simple. So section 395, rule of accent for verbs. The accent of verb forms is said to be recessive. That is, subject to the restrictions of the general rules of accent, section 391, it falls as far forward as possible, far to the front of the word as it can get, according to the rules. So it would like to be. Now, what's as far forward as you can get according to those rules? I mean, the antipenal. So it'll never be anything further forward than the antipenal. But it'll try to be on the antipenal if it can. But it can't always, of course, because sometimes you get a long suffix and that has to slide it down. So look at these first verb forms, luomen, epistuon, elusamen, luomatha, elusa, eluthete. All of those are on the antipenult. And you notice also that all of those have short ultimas. So in every case, the ultima is short, and the accent's on the antipenult. So in each of the forms above, the ultima is short, so that the accent falls as far forward as possible, that is, on the antipenult. Okay, then the next set of forms, pistuo, pistue, eluthe, pistuoi. Notice that in each of these forms, the ultima is long. Now, the question you might have is that pistuoi there, omicron iota, you've just been taught that the omicron iota is short when it's final, except for the optative forms. Remember, I think they mentioned that, I think, when the rule was given. So, except this is an optative form. We won't see very many optative forms in the New Testament, but there are some. So this is the exception to that rule. So it's considered long in this case when it's an optative ending. And the reason we decided that is because of the accent, where the accent falls. Otherwise you have to change the rule on accents or something. So it's kind of a little bit of a game that they play. You know, they set up a certain set of rules and then they call these the exceptions. The other guy might just as well come along and call the exceptions the rule and the other ones the exceptions, you know. So just try to be as economical as you can. All right. So here in the forms then, the dictionary forms of most verbs are going to be, at least the omega conjugations, they're going to be stressed on the penult. And their simple reason is that your stress is trying to move as far forward as possible, but in the dictionary form, the omega is the ending, and the omega is long. And so you can't get any further forward than the penult, and so that's where your accent's going to be. So you get used to that after a while. I mean, that's you almost, without even thinking of it, even without even looking at the accent, you know where to accent verbs, because they sound wrong if you don't. The pattern is so regular, in other words, that your ear picks up a certain sound and it sounds right, and if you say it a different way, it sounds wrong. Now, I know you're not in that state yet because you haven't had enough exposure to it to develop a pattern, but you'll see what I mean later on. Okay, then there's a couple other forms here, lua and klaya. In each of these forms, the ultima is short, so that the accent would stand on the antepenult if there were one. Since there is no antepenult, the accent stands on the penult. And since in each case the penult is long, it bears a circumflex. So in each of these cases, the penult is long. Now, of course, the upsilon, it could be either long or short. You happen to know it's long because it's a circumflex here. Okay? But the alpha iota, that's long anyway. It's not final here, so it's long. And that's pretty straightforward. These forms aren't real common forms anyway. And he's got a footnote here about this. The upsilon of luo is not, unfortunately, long in all forms of its paradigm, so that the nature of the accent must be learned from observation. Okay, so in other words, we've already seen the fact that upsilon can be sometimes short, sometimes long. You're just going to have to look at the accent to decide that, really. Okay, well, that's the basic rule, though. The basic rule isn't too difficult to follow, and as we're dealing with verb forms, you'll notice this in the forms that we examine. Yes?
Who's the first one to go over these accents?
Oh, well, the Greeks apparently came up with them. They had musical form to them, a tone to them, and everything else.
I guess I'm thinking in the
Oh, yes. Oh, I see what you're saying in terms of history. Well, as far as written forms are concerned, I don't know how soon they appeared in the minuscule manuscripts. You're probably going to start seeing them in the minuscules. And I can't remember now if we had a statement earlier about when these came into being. I thought there was some statement about it.
By 275 to 180 BC
or so? Okay, so...
Wasn't it that the uncial was used for manuscript? Mm-hmm. They still had it, didn't they have
anything? Now, that doesn't mean they didn't have accents. It just means that in a manuscript form that all uncials, it's not convenient to put accents in there.
And, well, is it possible that they had developed, besides an uncial, even in the BC time? I don't remember now exactly.
Well, that's...
In handwriting.
Yeah, the critical thing would be to see in the papyri if the accents were used in the papyri, and I don't recall now. I don't know if anybody's made a point of that I've seen, at least in the manuscripts and so forth, books. So somebody could check on that just out of curiosity to see what time in history these things began to be used. Apparently, you see, we know that I think it's pretty reasonable to suggest that whether they marked accents or not, they were using accents. It's hard to talk, it's hard to speak any word that's multisyllabic and not put a stress on one syllable or another. So there's habit patterns that are formed, and then the markings may have come in later on to indicate what those were. So just how soon the markings came, that'd be the question. And then, of course, you've got, since it is a dead language and since it's been a long time, you know, there's some questions as to whether we're putting the stress on the right syllables and so forth, too. Same problem occurs in Hebrew, too. Well, although in Hebrew it's more difficult because you don't have any accent marks, per se. Well, maybe it's easier. You don't have the accent marks. Okay. Any other questions on these accents? That's all we'll need to know about them for so far. And like I said, this doesn't need to be memorized. It's just a matter of having been exposed to it so that when you see some forms you won't be thrown into confusion. Now, we finished lesson 13, I believe, in the textbook. So we got through those aorist and imperfect verb forms. We haven't done the exercises yet. So for tomorrow, go ahead and do lesson 13 exercises, and we'll go ahead and start with it today in class here, so we'll get maybe some of this first part of it done for you. I'm especially interested in exercises 13D, because there you're getting into the more actual practical application of it. The exercises 13A, B, and C are more paradigm-oriented, and D is more practical-oriented. So if you'll take a look at 13A, maybe we'll do a little bit of this in class here, just to show you what needs to be done and give you some feedback and so forth as we go. And this is all, of course, with reference to chapter 13 and with reference to these verb forms that we've been introduced to, the imperfect and the aorist. And remember, in the category of the aorist, we have both first and second aorist, depending on how they form their forms. The meanings are not any different. Okay, in 13A, fill in the table below, imitating the model given. Retain the person and number of the given form, but change the tense as indicated. All the forms of this exercise are to be obtained by the rules given in lessons 12 and 13. All of the aorists required are first aorists. So he tells you that they're all first aorists, so you know how to make the forms without any question. Okay, what you're supposed to do then is follow the model. So with the model, we have luo, that's the present, first person singular, and indicative, active. And then we want the imperfect form, same thing, first person singular, then the future form, first person singular, and the aorist form, first person singular. So the imperfect is formed by adding the augment and then adding a different set of endings. So we have eluon, omicron nu, the ending for the first person singular. And the future, luso, just adding a sigma to the base, about all you've done. And the aorist, elusa, adding the augment, adding a sigma to the base, and adding the alpha ending for the first person singular. Okay, that's what you're to do in the rest of these examples. So number one, doxaze. First of all, what kind of form are we looking at here in the person and number? Okay, third person singular. Epsilon iota is your third person singular ending. So we're going to want third person singular in all the rest of these forms. Okay, so I want to make this in the imperfect. So it's doxaze in the present. What's going to be my imperfect form? Who's got a good guess? Yeah, Glenn? Yes, edoxaze. You've got the accent right there. Okay, but what's happening here is that we are going to put the augment on. Now our base is doxaz. That's our base. So you just take the suffix off and you've got the base. Okay, so we're going to want to put an augment on the base. So it'll be edoxaz, and then the epsilon ending is going to be your ending for the imperfect. And it could be epsilon nu also, edoxazen or edoxaze. It's got an optional nu on the ending. Okay? And then your accent, of course, is going to be, since the suffix is short, you can go to the antipenal, so it'll be edoxaze. Okay, then the future. We'll just have, now our base ends in a sigma, ends in a zeta here. Remember what the rule was for when the base ends in a zeta and you try to add a sigma to it? Yeah, it just turns to sigma. Just turns to sigma. You just drop the zeta up, put sigma on. So, only difference there then is going to be from the future and the present is just going to be putting a sigma instead of a zeta in the form. So it'll be doxase, epsilon iota again. Same ending system, but the stem change is the only thing that's different. Zeta changed to sigma. Okay, then in the aorist. Knowing what you know about the future here and what happens, you can pretty well predict what's going to happen in the aorist. And in the third person form, what we need to do is add the augment, keep that future base, as it were, the doxas, and then add the alpha type endings, which in this case, third person singular, is going to be an epsilon again. So it should be edoxase. Okay? Yeah, yes?
I have a tendency to add the new when,
oh, that's fine.
Do you see it more often with or without the new?
Oh, boy. I think it's about a toss-up. I think it's about 50-50, so don't worry about it. In the paradigm, sometimes I'll do it one way, sometimes I'll do it the other way because I'm tired of doing it that way, you know? So keep that in mind. I'll try to remember to mention it both ways so that if you do it one way or the other. But you might just... And once in a while, just vary it a little bit so that you're in your paradigm structure, you don't get locked into one form and forget that the other one's possible. That's kind of the main philosophy that I used in that respect. So edoxase or edoxasen. Okay, then number two, lampomen. The imperfect should be el lampomen, just the same form, just putting an augment on it. Because again, in this particular case, the suffix is the same, omen. And so the only difference between the perfect and the present form is going to be the augment in this particular case. It's not always the case, of course, as you know. And then the future, what are we going to do with the base ending in P when we add the sigma to it?
C.
Yeah, it's going to become C. So it becomes lampsomen. Lampsomen. For the future. And, well, by the way, what suffix is this? Omen. First person plural. First person plural. Okay. Then the aorist should be elampsamen. Elampsamen. The alpha mu epsilon nu ending. And still the C here because you've added the sigma and then the augment. So elampsamen. Epsilon lambda alpha mu C alpha mu epsilon nu. This nu is not optional, of course. This one is amen. That's the suffix. Okay, then number three, alephes. Okay, the imperfect. We've got an alpha here in the beginning, so when we add an epsilon to that for the augment, what are we going to get? Ada, right. So it's going to be alephes, because it's a short suffix. So and the epsilon sigma is going to be your suffix in this case. What suffix is this? Person and number?
Second person singular.
Okay, well, I've got five more minutes, so we can do a few more of these. So alephes, eta, lambda, epsilon, iota, phi, epsilon, sigma. Okay, then in the future, that phi is going to have a sigma added to it, and that's going to become c again. And we won't have an augment in the future, so it'll be alephes, epsilon, iota, sigma again, same ending that we had in the present. And then the aorist is going to be alephes. I'm shifting the accent according to where the rules would dictate, but it's going to be eta, lambda, epsilon, iota, psi, alpha, sigma. Alpha, sigma now for your second person singular ending in your aorist endings. These are all first aorist now, of course. Number four, question, Glenn?
Alephes, future tense.
Mm-hmm.
Should that be a circumflex?
No, not a circumflex, because the suffix is epsilon iota, that's long. When the suffix is long, the penult has to be acute. You can't have a circumflex on it. Okay? Any other question? If it were a short suffix, you'd be right. But if it was a short suffix on a verb, you see, on a verb that the short suffix is going to go all the way to the antipenult if it's got one. The only place you'll see a circumflex on one of these verb forms is if there is no antipenult. So it has to get stressed on the penult, and the suffix happens to be short, and the penult happens to be long. Okay, you got all those criteria.
So now that was alephes for the imperfect.
Yeah, alephes. Eta, lambda, epsilon, iota, phi, epsilon, sigma.
Okay, and in there, since the ultimate is short.
Right. Yeah, since the ultimate was short, I was able to slide the accent further forward. I was able to slide it up to the antipenult. In other words, the rule for verbs is it'll try to get as far forward as possible in any given form. And in the present form, you had epsilon, iota, sigma ending. That was long, so you could only be on the penult there. But in the imperfect, your suffix is epsilon sigma. So that's short. So now we can slide our accent further forward. Okay. All right, number four, phulasete. Okay, this is, what's the suffix there, ete? What is it? Second person plural. Okay. So the imperfect is just going to be, in the imperfect endings, it's the same suffix. So all we're going to do is add the augment. So ephulasete. Accent is not going to change syllable because it's already in the antipenal. Okay, in the future, what's going to happen to our double sigma? Yeah, goes to xi. So it's going to be phulaxete. Okay, with xi instead of the double sigma. And the aorist, the same thing will happen, but now we'll get the augment and we'll get a different suffix. So it's going to be ephulaxate, alpha, tau, epsilon for the ending, because that's your ending for the aorist, second person plural. And you've still got the xi because of the adding the sigma. We've got the augment also, ephulaxate. Try to pronounce that carefully. Okay, any questions on any of these so far? Be sure and ask them as we go. Okay, pau usin. Omicron, Upsilon, Sigma, Iota, Nu is the suffix on this, and what is that denoting?
Third person plural,
right. Or it could be, that Nu is movable, so it could be Pausi. Okay, then the imperfect form, we have quite a different suffix for the ending. And another thing to note about the Usi or Usin suffix is it's a two-syllable suffix. So you can you can pretty well guess that as you go through the paradigms, you're going to get some interesting accent shifts because you've got a two-syllable suffix on this thing. So because of the two-syllable suffix, the accent had to be go on pow there, the antipenal. But if I shorten that suffix down to just a singular syllable suffix like it is in the imperfect, just omicron nu, then my accent gets to shift. So it becomes epaon, epaon in the imperfect. Epsilon, the stem, p, alpha, upsilon, and then a new suffix, omicron nu. Omicron nu is the same suffix for the first person singular and the third person plural in the imperfect. And so it's a shorter suffix, syllable-wise, so your accent gets to go further forward. It's no longer on the pow syllable, it's on the augment now. Epaon. Okay, that's all the time. Finish out the rest of this then, and 13C, 13D, we'll go through that tomorrow. There's never any rest. Get done with the test, now we got more exercises.